Next hour, Linda Godfrey joins us. I Know What I Saw, as we talk about modern-day encounters with monsters. So get ready for that. When we come back with Dr. Jerome Corsi, we will take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Jerome Corsi with us, and we'll get your calls this hour as well. Jerry, before we take calls, I wanted to talk a little bit about your book, Silent No More. Did anybody from the Mueller investigation ever apologize to you for putting you through the ringer? As you mentioned, you were not indicted. Did anybody say, look, we're sorry we did this to you?
No, George, that's not the normal method for the Mueller group investigating. They were very, very, I thought, partisan. They had their minds made up that Donald Trump was a traitor. I tried to say, look, I've got evidence that could, I don't think Russia stole the emails from the Democrats. I think Seth Rich did it. Dr. Corsi, we're not interested in your evidence of who, your theories of who stole the emails. I mean, their minds were closed. And the problem I had with the, as I say in Silent No More, is in July and August 2016, our 25th wedding anniversary, I was in Italy with my wife. I had time. I really figured out that the next emails after July 2016 that Assange was going to make public were John Podesta's emails. Mm-hmm. And I did not get that information from Assange. I've never talked to Assange or WikiLeaks. I have no contact with them whatsoever. But the FBI was monitoring all my calls and all my emails, everything I've done, I think, was under FISA court, maybe NSA surveillance. They had everything. They knew everything about. They knew more. The FBI knew more about me than I knew about myself. I
mean, they probably knew from us when you were going to be on the show before you did.
They probably were listening. Probably were listening tonight. And the point is, I said no. I did not. Well, they were sure I had given this information to Roger Stone, and this was their whole collusion theory that I told Roger Stone about Assange and WikiLeaks, and then the Trump campaign coordinated through Roger Stone. It just didn't happen. I don't know WikiLeaks, and I did not connect Roger Stone to Assange or WikiLeaks, and the special prosecutor Mueller's team would not believe this. So I went through 40 hours of excruciating questioning where they went to visit everybody I really worked with in 2016 and 2017. And, you know, no one, everybody said, of course he doesn't have anything to do with Assange. And Assange said he didn't have anything to do with me. But it was not good enough for the Mueller team. They still said they were going to prosecute me for lying. And I said, well, go ahead. But I'm not swearing to a crime I didn't commit. They wanted me to plead to one count of a memory mistake when they'd allowed me to amend the testimony. I refused to do it. They said, go and put me in jail the rest of my life if I had that kind of a corrupt system. Well, I was never indicted.
And how do you feel about it now in terms of, did justice prevail? Obviously, you didn't get indicted, so you feel good about that. But, I mean, do you still have a bad taste over this thing?
Oh, yes, George. I mean, I feel vindicated in that I was not indicted. But the way the Mueller investigation proceeded is not my idea of justice in America. They were presuming people guilty. They were doing massive surveillance. I've sued Mueller in federal district court now, a major suit for $350 million for leaking and for prosecutorial misconduct. I'm waiting to see if the case is going to be heard. I'll take it all the way to the Supreme Court. And my next book, which is going to be posted on Amazon shortly, is called Coup d'Etat. It's going to be about the exposing the deep state treason, and really I think the plan to reelect President Trump, which now this positions, because President Trump was also vindicated, even though there are continuing questions that are being raised by Congress. I think the American people, when the Mueller report came out and there were no further indictments, I think the American people decided this is pretty well resolved. The Mueller investigation was extremely thorough and extremely partisan, and this is not the way justice in America should be done.
Well, and I got to tell you, Jerry, and this is not with you, but I have never witnessed more hate on both sides of the aisle now, politically, ever before. I mean, I get emails for people who are pro-Trump, against Trump, and their hate on both sides. I mean, The Republicans hate people who are liberal. The liberals hate people who are conservative. Not everybody. Not everybody. But, I mean, I've never seen anything like that. When are we going to get this country going again and put this other stuff aside?
Well, George, we've got to get this behind us because the partisan feelings people have right now, which are becoming intolerant, are not consistent with the First Amendment and our acceptance of protest, our acceptance of disagreement, our acceptance of religion. I mean, the subject we're talking about tonight with Islam, you know, I walked 200 miles in 2005 and 2006 when I wrote Atomic Iran with people from Iran who wanted freedom in their own country. They were mostly Muslim. I don't condemn Islam as a religion. I think Islam needs a reformation. Well, Christianity went through a reformation. We don't have crusades anymore. We don't have, you know, the Inquisition anymore. All religions need to go through reformations, but we can't condemn a religion that a billion people believe in. It's not
like the same way, Jerry, you can't condemn every priest because so many other priests were involved in pedophilia. You can't blame every priest for that.
Precisely, George. These distinctions are part of, you know, the First Amendment was meant to say that we have to be tolerant. We have to hear arguments we don't agree with. The First Amendment is meant to point out to us you can't just hear things you agree with. The idea of not being offended. Well, the First Amendment was designed to permit people to offend us as long as it remains in the discourse of speech and debate. The whole idea of John Stuart Mill and the whole original liberal thinking that came out behind our Constitution, going back to its roots in Aristotle, championed debate and free speech because it was the way we advance as a species, to question, to challenge, to dispute, to argue. These are fundamentally human values, and they require tolerance of ideas that you don't really like or agree with.
Let's go to the phones as promised. We'll start with Jerry in Williams, Iowa to get things started. Hi, Jerry. Good morning.
Yeah. Hello, gentlemen. I just wanted to say, Dr. Corsi, my sister and I both think of you as one of our modern-day heroes, and you really give me courage to speak well of my country. And you do too, George. We love our country, and we just think there's more right going than wrong. But so I love you, George, for having Dr. Jerome on. So I wanted to ask you about a two-state solution as a possible part of a – is that a Mideast peace solution, or is it really kind of an abomination that really could lead to what people say is the tribulation, giving away the promised land? Do you see that as – I mean, how do you view that? I don't know if you're really into biblical prophecy or not. But anyway, God bless both you gentlemen, and I'll listen off the air.
All right, Jerry. There are some who have been on our program, Jerry, that believe we are in the beginning of end times, that these biblical prophecies are happening. I don't know if you touch that much, but what do you think?
Well, George, biblical prophecy is not my specialty. I mean, I like to talk about things that I really feel I've spent enough time studying that I have some expertise in, but my reading of the Bible for myself is that God gives us the choice, the free choice, and the future is determined in large part by what we do. So that if we, commit ourselves to right and commit ourselves to peace, work for solutions in the Middle East, I don't think it's inevitable that we have an apocalypse. I think, that's one outcome. It's one possible outcome. And parts of the Bible that say if we, get on our knees and pray, God will heal our land and heal ourselves. I mean, we need to be repentive, and we need to understand we are fallen creatures. My whole religion is I'm a Christian, and I strongly have biblical roots in it. I'm just not a biblical scholar. And while I see why people can say we're in end times, because we've never been closer to the potential for a nuclear war that could destroy everything we know in civilization, and that's the ultimate fear. I think we've got to be very cautious about war in the Middle East, and we've got to do what we can to resolve these things peacefully. That's what I've dedicated myself for the last 15 years, George.
Well, and Jerry, I got to tell you, and I want to react to our caller thanking me for putting you on over all these years. And I want to say this because I haven't had this opportunity to publicly say this to you. You've been with us on this program since about 2004, covering a lot of different issues. We've talked about abiotic oil. We've talked about Iran. We've talked about hunting Hitler. We've talked about who really killed Kennedy, all your works. And I have found you to be personally impeccably honest, a hardworking journalist, and one heck of a guy. And I have witnessed the ups and downs of your personal life and your personal career. And I wasn't going to turn my back on you. In what I saw with this investigation, and I knew in my heart, you didn't do anything wrong. You were a newsman. If you did anything, you were probing as a newsman for the work you do. And I shouldn't be thanked for putting you on. You're a dedicated American who wants to get to the truth.
Well, George, I deeply appreciate that. I've been on your show now really for 15 years, and I truly admire Coast to Coast. I mean, you have a great forum where ideas can be discussed and ideas that are, I mean, look at UFOs, the discussions you've had on this for 15 years. Today, we're really at the edge, I think, of the government finally admitting what the government has hidden for all these years on UFOs. I mean, you've cut into subjects that others would not touch upon, and that's what makes Coast to Coast such a great show. And I'm honored to be on the forum, and I'm thankful and very appreciative of your words, George. Thank you very much.
Just don't tell me you're storming Area 51 with a million people.
I'm not going to Area 51. I might report on it, George, but I'm not going to be in Area 51. I'll be watching it very carefully.
I mean, I'm afraid something could happen because the military protects that area, and they protect it with guns. I mean, they don't fool around out there. And, Jerry, I'm telling my listeners, do not go there.
No, don't go. It's good. I would not advise anybody to go to Area 51. It's a very seriously, heavily protected, very secret facility. And the military is not going to take kindly to people just walking in and moseying around. But the fact that it is so protected, George, and so secretive. Now, that my instincts as a journalist, I want to know why. What are they hiding?
Oh, yeah, there's something there. Now, look, as a journalist, we do have a responsibility. If there's proprietary things that the country has to have for the security of our nation, I get that. You get that. I understand that. But, you know, if indeed they've got UFOs there and they've got aliens there, I'd sure like to know about it. But people can't break the law to find out. We've got to do it the right way.
That's right, and I think, you know, I feel that government secrets, to me, are intrinsically, by their nature, suspect. I'm very much in favor of what our founding fathers had. There's no provision in the Constitution for government secrets. The government should be open and transparent. The American people are the sovereign. The government is not the sovereign. Back to our founding, it was the people first and then the states and only later the federal government. And we forget that. We think the federal government is sovereign. So I very much want freedom of the press. I want questioning. But I think people have also got to be very respectful of the law and not break the law. I mean, the issues that I had with Mueller were simply they could not believe that I figured all this out myself and was so right. Was telling people in July 2016, months before the October release by WikiLeaks of these Podesta emails, I'd even figured out pretty much what they were going to be about. Because I've been studying Podesta for 10 years. I've had a very good idea what he was going to be talking about. And just like I've studied the Clintons, just like I've studied Donald Trump, it's part of what I do by nature. But the Mueller people, with this investigation, I thought, was proceeding by misconduct because the Mueller people knew the one count they wanted me to plead guilty to involved testimony they'd allowed me to amend over memory mistakes. Well, that's fraudulent. I didn't lie to them in the sense of giving them information I knew to be false with an intent to deceive them on a material subject. I forgot a few emails, and I amended the testimony. So I refuse to plead guilty to that. I'm not going to swear in a Bible before God to a crime I didn't commit. I couldn't do it.
Let's go east of... I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Jerry. My wife finally said to me, she said, I'd rather be married to you the rest of your life and visit you in prison than have you not be the man I married. And when my wife said that to me, that was really what made the whole decision for me that I was going to tell Mueller to take a hike.
Well, had you gone to prison, I hope they would have put you where Sirhan Sirhan is so you could get me an exclusive interview with him.
Well, that would be good, George. I'd be delighted to do that.
You know, you and I were going to go to Cuba to interview Fidel Castro, and he dies on us.
I know. We should still do things like this, George. We got plenty of people to go interview yet. Sirhan would be fascinating to interview.
We were getting, I didn't tell you all this, we were getting so close to being able to interview Fidel. There are things I'll tell you off the air.
Sure.
But, I mean, it almost was going to happen, and then he died.
We really should do some more of this, George. I think we have opportunities here to find some fascinating people. Seymour Hersh is going to come back into the spotlight over this Seth Rich. He was one of the very first to see. He's been a brilliant journalist.
He was great on the Kennedy investigation, the assassination.
My lie. He's done so much, Seymour Hersh, and he had the inside track on Seth Rich to begin with.
I mean, how old is he now?
Oh, he must be...
He's got to be in his 80s.
He's probably older than me, George. There's very few people I think are older than me.
Let's go to Brian in Indianapolis. Go ahead, Bri.
Hey, George. Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
Great. Good. Hey, listen, I got three quick questions. And Dr. Corsi, over the last 7 or 8 years I've been a coach, family member, you've been fair and balanced every time you've been on, and you've really expanded my knowledge in being able to engage people in Middle Eastern events. So now I got three quick questions. Number one, just if it comes to pass, we don't really need another war. What would be, if you was to advise the Allies, how would this play out? And who would be the actor to defend Iran versus our allied, you know, attack?
All right, let's take that one first. We'll take them one at a time, Bri, because we're going to hit the break. So I'll probably have to come back to you. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, I don't think, I mean, first of all, I don't want us to attack, and I think it would be a mistake. I think the economic pressures are the way to go. Now, if we do get to an attack, I want it to be a very limited attack. You know, President Trump, even when he attacked Syria, was very limited in terms of the missile strikes that were launched on Syria. And I don't want to see us in another ground war. I mean, a war with Iran is a disaster. It's a catastrophe. And in the final analysis, if Iran's going to actually have a nuclear weapon to drop on Tel Aviv, I'm sure Israel's not going to stand by. But I've been doing everything possible for 15 years to prevent that day from coming.
All right, Brian, we'll come back to you after the break for your other two quick questions and the rest of you on hold. Just hang there. We will do our best to get with you. Dr. Jerome Corsi with us, author of a number of books, including Atomic Iran and also Silent No More. His website, CorsiNation.com. That is his relatively new website, CorsiNation.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com as well. Next hour, as I mentioned, Linda Gottfried joins us as we talk about her latest work with monsters. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with our final segment with Jerry Corsi, Dr. Jerome Corsi. Let's go back to Brian in Indianapolis, who had another question. Go ahead, Bri.
Hey, George, I appreciate you extending me this courtesy, and I apologize to the Coast family for taking up this time. Dr. Corsi, I'm of the opinion that war would be disastrous with Iran. Option two, does the United States have enough naval power to close or hold open or even hold on to the Straits of Hormuz? And question number three, if we do a limited strike, would the mother of all bombs have any effect on the bunkers that these nuclear program weaponry are stationed at? Thank you, George, and have a good day.
Okay, Brian. Straits of Hormuz, Alan, if it's not mined, we can get through that, can't we, Jerry?
That's right, George. I mean, we've done it before, going back even into the 80s when Iraq and Iran had their war. We've had the U.S. Navy go with convoys of oil tankers to protect them. It's always a very dangerous operation, especially when Iran is being belligerent and attacking tankers. Very recently, the British frigate that intervened when these small boats were harassing a British oil tanker in the Gulf, and they protected the tanker. It can be done. Again, I agree that war would be disastrous. This mother of all bombs, the MOAB, which is a weapon we have that is really a bunker buster bomb, I'm not sure it would be sufficient to really hit all of the deeply underground and protected facilities, nuclear facilities that Iran now has. Occasionally, we keep finding out about a new one. One of the, you know, the groups that is opposition to Iran constantly is, you know, revealing new sites that occur. I just don't think a war. You know, these sites are very protected. They're hardened. The nuclear sites in Iran. The idea of a pinpointed strike is a great idea, but in reality, there's always collateral damage, human beings injured or killed. I really don't think war is a solution in Iran or the Middle East, and I'm really encouraging the president to continue exerting restraint.
Would we use bunker buster bombs, Jerry?
We could, George, but, you know, some of these facilities are not going to be destroyed by bunker buster. They're just too deeply protected and deeply underground. I mean, it would take essentially a nuclear weapon or a small tactical nuclear weapon to penetrate some of these facilities. And there, many of them are in Iran or embedded in population areas. Some of the most important nuclear facilities are right in Tehran, in the mountains bordering Tehran. And I don't know how you hit those without having major collateral damage, which is why Iran puts those facilities in population centers to prevent attacks.
Let's go to Archer in Maui, and that's in Hawaii, of course. Hi, Archer, go ahead.
Aloha, gentlemen, and mahalo nui loa from a longtime listener and reader.
Thank you, Archer.
Yeah, Dr. Corsi, I'm trying to understand the mentalities we're dealing with in the Middle East. And would you please explain to me how a good lawyer, strict, whatever you call it, a Shiite, is to take this Mahdi in the well story? If it's not literal, could you walk us through the symbolism, please?
Well, the story is a literal story by the, the Shiites really believe that this happened, that there was a member of the Muhammad, the Prophet's family, that was destined to be heading Islam, that went down this well into hiding, and like, you know, hundreds of years ago, will come out of the well in the apocalypse to create triumph for the Shiite faith. Now, the Sunnis, when they look at this, the Sunnis believe that the heads of Islam should be caliphates, should be religious but basically secular, much like the Ottoman Empire. When the Saudis, for instance, which are the leading Sunni power in the Middle East, view what the Shiites are doing, they look at them as nutcases. They just think this is ridiculous. But you can't ridicule a religious idea that another group fervently holds. They really do. The Shiites believe this. Ahmadinejad, I was in the UN when Ahmadinejad, former prime minister of Iran, gave speeches about the Mahdi. I reported on them years ago. And it is a really fervently held belief. Many religious beliefs are questioned by others who don't hold that religion, but it produces a radicalism, a fervor in the Shiites for an apocalypse, which is not present in other forms of Islam, namely the Sunnis.
All right, great. Thank you. Let's go to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Welcome to the program. Frank, go ahead.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you.
Thanks, Frank.
Dr. Corsi, I agree with some of what you say. I'd like to ask you a question about the president's judgment. Now, when he hired Paul Manafort as his campaign manager, did anybody bother to do a background check on the man? And then it seems like he's law and order president, but seems like people that work for him, he doesn't call them criminals. He calls other people criminals. And Paul Manafort, if anything, if he worked for me and didn't tell me about his past, he could have messed up the president running for president with this skeletons in the closet, although the skeletons wear $2,000 suits. They're skeletons nevertheless. So what do you know about that? And I think president exercised poor judgment. He talks these people out, and then end up 3-4 weeks later, he fires them because they won't kiss his feet and shine his shoes. So what do you say about Paul Manafort? And then And then is his sentence fair? It should have been more, but what do you think of that?
Well, the Paul Manafort's crimes that he was convicted on have to do with tax evasion and money laundering and having money in offshore accounts. Now, before you do a one-sided judgment of Paul Manafort, remember that Tony Podesta, who's the brother of John Podesta, was also involved in many of the same deals in Ukraine as with Paul Manafort. And Tony Podesta closed up his consulting firm and has not been investigated by the Justice Department for what may be similar kinds of offenses that Manafort created. I don't know the financial dealings of Tony Podesta, but I know they were not investigated. And the crimes that Paul Manafort was convicted of have nothing to do with Russian collusion or with anything he did with Donald Trump or anything Donald Trump was involved in. And the IRS had examined Manafort over years, but until Manafort was the campaign manager for Donald Trump, the IRS had not brought any charges against Manafort, which I consider to be somewhat unusual.
Next up, we've got Steve in North Carolina now. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead. Steve? Oh, sorry, Steve. Poor guy was on hold for 45 minutes, Jerry, but we had to run. Cornelius is with us in Louisiana. How are you, Cornelius? How's the weather out there?
Well, I was just telling Tommy, I wanted to thank y'all for our prayers because it missed us, but it did hit other people. And thanks, Doc, for out there in California and all y'all praying for us. Jerome, believe me, I've been through Mueller, the ringing with Mueller, and George and Tommy know about it. What I wanted to ask you is I hope you can win your lawsuit against Mueller, because like I said, Mueller set me up in something, and it was just unbelievable. And they put a piece of rope in my food to make me plead guilty. So I'm so glad you didn't plead guilty and that you stood. I'm a Christian, and I stand with you, Jerome, so God bless you. Thank you, Tommy and George.
All right, that's something you can't comment on, Jerry, but he was convicted, tried, put away, but he's not too happy about that. Next up, go ahead.
I appreciate his comments. I want to thank him for his kind words.
John in Cleveland, Ohio, first-time caller. Hi, John.
I think people, to understand what's going on, have to check some simple phrases on a search. Gladio crimes of the U.S. Empire. If you look that up, there's a lot of links to the fact that the United States CIA has involved itself in frame-ups and false disinformation.
Wow, no doubt of that, John. You're spot on that.
Yes, and false flag frame-ups of countries, including Syria, Libya, and, of course, in Vietnam. And we find these things out much too late after killing millions of people with carpet bombing. And I think we've got to really look into these things and immunize ourselves against this kind of propaganda. And also look up CIA controls prostitute media, Operation Mockingbird. The CIA's infiltration, massive infiltration of the media to lie us into these wars. And I think the idea that other countries are supporting terrorism, I think, is exactly the inversion of the truth. The United States armed, financed, and largely created the Mujahideen through the ISIS, to Al-Qaeda, to use against countries that hate Al-Qaeda and ISIS and have killed those scummy terrorists in Iraq and Syria and Libya. And we're actually using them as our foot soldiers to our Air Force when we go in and bomb them in places like Libya. And if you look at this phrase, Trump's intel chief, Dan Coats, said at the Aspen Institute, he didn't know it had leaked out, that North Korea learned from the disarming and destruction by the United States of Libya and the assassination of Gaddafi to get nuclear weapons as a deterrent and to never give them up. And this is right out of the mouth of Dan Coats, Trump's own intel chief. He didn't know that would be leaked out at this elite meeting. But I think we've got to realize that the United States is involved in terrorism around the world, framing up under other countries for it. And if you just look up Operation Gladio, and Operation Northwoods. They even planned to massively murder Americans in the early 60s, all the Joint Chiefs of the Pentagon, to frame up Cuba. Kennedy called it off, thankfully. But this is what we're dealing with right here before we start demonizing other countries.
Well, Jerry, you know, he's spot on a number of things he just said.
Well, George, I did my doctoral dissertation at Harvard on the Pentagon Papers case. And if anyone, you know, remembers 1971 when Daniel Ellsberg from the Rand Corporation stole and published the Pentagon Papers, Supreme Court case said the newspapers had a right to publish what was stolen. That Pentagon Papers study, which was done early in the Vietnam War, showed that from the first months, Secretary of Defense McNamara and President Johnson knew the wars we were fighting, it was a losing cause, and yet we sent 50,000 men and women to die in that war, which was based on fraudulent premises, which the Pentagon Papers showed. These are serious concerns. It's why I'm very suspect of a CIA. I don't like government secrecy, and I think these secret organizations that we have, and John Kennedy and the Bay of Pigs, it was another good example of how these agencies can and do go rogue.
Let's go to Ed in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hello, Edward. Go ahead, sir.
George, thanks for taking my call. And
sure.
Dr. Corsi, I was listening to Mark Levin the other day. Congress, along with 9 Republicans, just passed a bill recently tying Trump's hands to where he cannot take any kind of military action whatsoever in the Middle East should a situation arise where he needs to make a retaliatory strike, you know, limited. He can't even do that without approval of Congress. Now, what they're trying to do, I believe, is setting him up for impeachment because they know that Trump just might go against their wishes should something arise. You know, like, say, for instance, we had to blow one of their boats out of the water, you know what I'm saying, or whatever, any kind of situation that might call for military action. They're apparently trying. Now, Mark Levin is not a crackpot. This guy's smart. I don't know if you've ever listened to him before or not, but he, you know, he's got his facts together. He said no American president in history has ever been treated this way. Tying this man's hands will put our military at risk over there in the Middle East because Trump can't do anything unless he goes through Congress. Absolutely. And you know what they're going to do. They're not going to stand with Israel, and they're not going to stand with Trump. Anything.
See, I don't think, Ed, and I think you've got some points there, but I don't think this president is going to wait if military action is needed. What do you think, Jerry?
Well, there's Article 2 powers the Congress cannot restrain the president from exercising. So I'm sure there would be some circumstances, although I'm sure they'd have to be pretty extreme, where the president would be required to take action and not wait for Congress. The idea of getting congressional approval is probably, in general, a good idea. I know and have met Mark Levin. I think he's sort of Mark Levin's good analyst, and I respect his views.
He's a good talk show host.
Yeah, he's a good talk show host. But I'm saying, I agree with you, George. I think there are constitutional powers the president has cannot be restrained by Congress when it's a critical national defense issue and the president must act. Certainly, protecting Israel should there be a war or a nuclear strike from Iran, these extreme circumstances, I don't think the president's going to have a time or concern to deal with Congress. The authorization for different kinds of military actions, I think it's appropriate to go to Congress. But the president has powers under Article 2 that will not be restrained even by the current legislation.
Jerry, the clock has got us. Keep in touch with us. Anytime you need to pop on to update us on anything, you let us know, okay?
Always a great pleasure. Thank you, George. I really appreciate your show and the great audience. Thank you very much. God bless.
The most amazing audience out there in radio land by far. No question about it. Up next, Linda Godfrey's joining us as we're going to be talking about her investigation into monsters. So we're going to take a little ride on the paranormal side here on Coast to Coast AM. Linda's always a great guest. And, of course, in our last hour, we will take phone calls with Linda right here on Coast to Coast AM.